When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Mo Show on Rock M Radio. I'm your host, Chad Moeller. I was the longtime PR guy for Mizzou Athletics, and I joined Rock M team not too long ago, and we came up with a podcast as an idea to take my experiences and friendships from the days I had on the inside and bring those to those people and those personalities to Tiger fans. So this is the fourth episode of my show, and I'm very grateful that you're following along. And very excited to bring you my next guest. He was the what most people think is the catalyst to Mizzou football turning the corner in the early years of the Gary Pinkel era. You saw him throw the ball. You saw him run the ball. He even caught the ball a few times. He did a lot of things. In the end, he became the first player in Division I history to ever throw for 8,000 yards and run for 4,000 yards. So you know who it is. You know him as number 16, and he is Brad Smith. So the quick setup for Brad is, you know, we all know he was kind of an undervalued, I think he was a three-star recruit out of Youngstown, Ohio. Thankfully for Mizzou's good fortunes, he had been recruited by Coach Pinkel and Coach Matt Eberflus, who were at Toledo at the time when Brad was about to get done with his high school career. Just so happened that Coach Pinkel took the job at Mizzou and brought his staff with, and that pre-existing relationship helped lure Brad to Columbia to try and build something. And obviously we all benefited from that as Mizzou fans. So very grateful that it worked out that way, as all Mizzou fans are, I'm sure. So undoubtedly one of the most exciting players in Mizzou history is Brad Smith, but more importantly, one of the truly good guys you'd ever want wearing the black and gold. And I think that'll come through in our visit that you're about to see. So I hope you enjoy the visit we had. It was a great time catching up with Brad. And without further ado, here's number 16 himself, Brad Smith. All right, it's Brad Smith. Welcome, Brad. Great to see you.
What's up, Chad, man? Thanks for having me.
Hey, I really appreciate you joining. So we're going to talk about a lot of things here in our visit. I thought it would be fun to talk about lots of different things. So we'll get into all that. But for me, I want to start with, is it hard for you to believe, as it is hard for me to believe, that it's been almost 20 years since your senior season at Mizzou? Can you believe that?
Ah, man, just hearing you saying that, it's like, I can't believe it. 20 years, that's crazy. No, I can't.
I'm not trying to make you feel old, but welcome to getting older, you know.
No. Oh, you did. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's just crazy when I was thinking about that the other day as I was kind of coming up with some questions. But so we'll talk about all sorts of things, you know, your NFL career. And, you know, you had a nice, successful NFL career, longer than most averages, I would say. And then so, again, we'll get into that. But if you would, maybe kind of start off by telling everybody what you've been up to since you hung up the cleats.
I think I finished in, like, 2014, right before the 2015 season, something like that. Mm-hmm. So after that, just kind of did nothing. Just got away, got to wake up in the morning and not have anything to do. And, you know, it felt good. Then, you know, my kids and everything, they got busier in school and sports and that kind of thing. So just really pouring a lot of time into them. And then just recently got to some investing with real estate and some tech things that we're doing. One in particular is it's an athletic platform similar to LinkedIn, to where we can connect everybody in the athletic industry, whether it's, you know, from communications to players to coaches to general managers and high school kids who want to get better at their sport. all those kind of things all in one place. So we're working on that right now. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, we had talked about that, I don't know, maybe a year ago or so. You'd reached out to me and we'd talk briefly. Where can people find more information about that? Or is it ready to for people to look into yet? Or
well, we're in beta with our testing, getting through all the bugs.
Gotcha.
So they can go to connectedathletics.org. They can go on there and kind of get a brief overview of what we got going on. And we'll make it available and more people more aware once we, you know, have gone through our testing phases and getting it to where we want it. So it's really exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that's great. Good stuff. So yeah, I'm happy to promote it any way I can when it's when it continues to build and be ready. So you
Thank
keep
you.
Us posted there. Of course. So remind me about your family, kids, mm-hmm. How old are they now? What are they up to?
Well, my kids, my boy is 13 and my daughter is 11. So they're in school. They all play sports. My daughter loves flag football, basketball.
Okay.
She doesn't like track. She don't like to run. volleyball.
I don't blame her for that.
Yeah, me neither. Like, I did not like running for exercise. And then my son plays football, basketball, track. Did a little baseball, but now he's not doing that anymore. So that's a lot of going on right now with them. And then my wife, she's graduated from Mizzou as well with her PhD in bioengineering. So now she's did some consulting. Now she's a full-time associate pastor at our church, helping with missions and adult education. So she oversees those areas. So that's what we do. So she's crazy busy. So I'm the taxi service for all.
Hey, that's a very important part of life. I remember those days. So that's a big job. And you're in Austin, right? You're still in Austin?
Yes.
And how long have you been there?
Since I retired. So that's 2015, 2014.
Okay. Yeah. Good deal. Well, that's a great place.
A little
while now. It'd be fun to have them in the SEC now, so we'll get to see some Mizzou Texas battles coming up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, that's gonna be nice. Wear my Mizzou stuff.
Yeah. Hey, do you get to follow Mizzou all that much? You know, when the season's going on, do you get to throw the Tigers on TV at all? You try to keep track of them?
Oh, absolutely. No doubt. I watch them anytime they're on. Anytime I'm available to do it, I'm watching them or checking the scores, or checking the Mizzou Twitter and see the game updates and those things. So I'm always keeping track of them.
I gotcha. Yeah, it was a fun year last year, wasn't it?
Oh man, that was crazy. And then I'm from Ohio initially, Youngstown, Ohio. So my whole family, they love Mizzou, but they wanted Ohio State to win. So that was so nice.
Yeah. No doubt. Hey, one thing, this is just very random. I don't even know if this is a question as much as just a memory of mine, but you were always, when we were together, you were always so nice to fans. Part of my role with you is to play the bad guy eventually and say, you get inundated with all these people, surrounding you wanting autographs and all this stuff. And, you were so kind to them and you'd sign anything anybody put in front of you. And I had to be the bad guy to tell people, hey, I'm sorry. We've been doing this for 20, 30 minutes. We've got to go. I've got to get him somewhere. And it's just, it was a fun thing to experience. And I also remember when you started, you would do this really long, elongated signature, Bradley Smith, number 16. And then you got smart and realized, that's going to take me forever signing all these things. So then you just did a quick, Brad Smith scribble or whatever. So
I remember it. Oh man, I remember that, and I appreciate you for all your help, man. those were fun. Those were fun. Getting to meet everybody, that's fun.
So I thought we'd get into just kind of childhood and coming up around football, and then go from there. So, your story about having some physical challenges growing up, they were well documented. And I always thought that was a neat part of your personal story, your journey about overcoming those things and the help you had, from your mom and others who helped you kind of get past those things. Would you Would you humor me and just kind of go through, you know, what you dealt with when you were growing up?
Yeah. So, just from what my understanding of us, I was born with club feet, and they were kind of turned in really badly. So you rolled over and then turned in. So yeah, you know, people pigeon toe, their feet turned in. So mine were extremely turned in, and then club. So, you know, having to have my feet broken and placed in cast and all those kind of things, you know, and being, you know, my mom being told that I wouldn't be able to walk ever, or if I did walk, it would be, you know, with severe, you know, severe pain and issues, and it wouldn't be, you know, walk well. And then, you know, that was story. So my mom is, you know, she's a strong Christian woman, prayer warrior. So, I mean, that's what she did. And, you know, make sure she did all the things, put my shoes on the wrong feet to make sure they turned out, braces and all those kind of things. And by the grace of God, I was able to, you know, at least walk as a kid. And, right. And then, you know, and then go on to be able to run and those things of that nature. So that's, yeah, in short, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just think it's an amazing thing to, I mean, because obviously people watching you when you were playing would have no idea. It's just amazing how you got past all that stuff. So thanks for recounting that. What are some of the first memories you have of football, you know, when you were growing up, whether it was just becoming aware of it and liking it or deciding that you want to try to play it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we were living in Los Angeles. I think I was like 5 or 6 years old, and my brother and I, we playing in the front yard. And I just remember, you know, we ran into each other or something, and I just, my nose started bleeding. And I just started crying, and they made me go in the house, and like, you know, that little kid that just gets mad. And so that was kind of my earliest memory of, you know, tossing the ball or getting tackled, and that actually just kind of like that anger, that passion to, like, you know, not let it happen again. It's kind of something that kind of stuck with me. Sure. Then you go to, we moved to Ohio from Los Angeles. And, you know, the first thing my mom does is puts us in football at 6, 7 years old. She's like, we need to toughen up. And so if you know anything about Ohio and Youngstown in particular, you'll get tough. Yeah. You know, you'll get real tough real quick. So, And it helped me a lot in a lot of ways. I don't know if we're getting to other parts, but yeah, that's kind of my first memory.
Sure. Did you always play quarterback? Was that always? I thought you were maybe a running back for a while. Is that? Or did you play just a little bit of everything?
No, I was a I was an offensive guard when I first started playing, and then like a defensive end. Yeah, so I played that kind of like my first 2 years of playing football.
Right.
Then I picked up a fumble one time and took off running and scored. And then they started letting me, you know, get the ball and run with it every now and again, and just kind of kept growing from there. Then I ended up playing quarterback. And it was like, you may throw the ball twice, 3 times a game. So it was all, you know, hand it off, then fake it and run type situation. So that's kind of how it progressed over time. But I started off, I was an offensive guard.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Again, right. Something guard, like, to be exact.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll advance a little bit then. And, you know, you're in high school and you're starting to get recruiting, starting to pick up a little bit. And eventually you got some interest from a guy named Gary Pinkle and an assistant coach of his, Matt Eberflus, right? They started talking to you while they were still at Toledo, right? Is when they first reached out to you.
Yes.
And as fate would have it, obviously the job at Mizzou opens up, Coach Pinkle gets the job. He brings his staff to Columbia and they decide, you know, they want to still recruit you, and thankfully for Mizzou's good fortunes, you permitted that. You and your family permitted that. And again, I don't know. This is so much of a question. It's just a memory. Coach Pinkle tells a story all the time, you know, of them recruiting you, and to get you. Obviously, they had to attract you and your mom and your family, but also your pastor. And he tells a story about how they were sitting one trip to see you in your pastor's office at the church, and just the conversation they had. And, you know, your pastor told them, hey, you're getting an amazing young man here. And coach, you know, said, yeah. And I told him, oh, I know, we're so excited. It's going to be so great. And the pastor cut him off. He said, no, you have no idea what kind of young man you're getting here. And coach just always tells that story about, you know, how much of an impression he made at that point. But yeah, talk about just the recruiting process a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, I guess so. Going back, I wasn't highly recruited at all. you know, freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, even, you know, just nothing. I wasn't even thinking about being recruited. I just wanted to be a good player for my team, for my high school. Then, like, we went to like a Nike camp, and then I think it was West Virginia or something. And so they start showing a little interest, and you start getting these letters, and, you know, people send them letters and stuff. So again, you know, no offers or anything like that. And my senior year comes, and we go out and play and finish up. And then kind of after that, you know, I didn't know if they were now rather to call them offers. It was just kind of like, we're interested in you. So,
right.
You know, Louisville and West Virginia and Toledo and all the MAC schools in Youngstown State. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, nobody I knew ever played college or college football. So, and Bishop Wagner he's like my dad. So it was, you know, more so talking to my dad than it was a pastor. So, you know, we leaned a lot on his wisdom, just, you know, understanding people and things like that.
Sure.
And, you know, so Toledo was an option. And also at Youngstown State, there was a guy there named Jim Tressel. He ended up coaching at Ohio State. So at the same time, he was transitioning, getting a job at Ohio State from Youngstown State. And so he was deciding whether to recruit me to Ohio State or not. Then they had, you know, I guess they got the number one quarterback in the country that year. So I was like, it's probably not a good idea, which I appreciate his honesty. And but then Coach Pinkle and Coach Eber, especially, you know, said, like, we really think you could come and help build this program and help change it and help with our plan of what we're trying to do. And that was just exciting to me, like the idea of building up something special was like, that was right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, obviously we're all glad it worked that way. So, you choose Mizzou, you get to campus, and, you know, it's your first year there. I know the plans weren't to play you in general, but I know you turned heads in practice that year, you know, running scout team mostly. Did you come close to playing at all that very first year, do you think? Was that ever much of a consideration?
You know what, man? Like, I wish I'd have been more aware of what was going on around me. Like, I was just like, run the scout team, okay. Go to class, okay. Go to meetings, yeah. Like, so I didn't, like, try to dig too deep into what the coaches were thinking.
Yeah.
I like the red shirt, fine, yeah. Go. I get to get bigger, faster, stronger, and practice. I just love playing. So you had to ask coach. I have no idea what their thought process was, but I was having fun.
Yeah. So we'll fast forward then to, you know, after that first season's over, we get to 2002, which is your redshirt freshman season. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through summer ball, go through fall camp, and we come out of camp and Coach Pinkle announces that you're going to be the starter for the first game against Illinois in the dome. You know, a big thing. Everyone's really excited about, wow,
right.
Look at this kid that no one's ever seen. What are we going to get? Nobody knows. Do you remember, how were you told that you were getting the starting gig? Do you remember that conversation? Who told you, where you were, all that stuff?
Not specifically. I think, you know, probably Coach Yost or somebody.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, kind of said it, or, you know, kind of put it into place. Cause you kind of look at the depth chart and, how it's laid out, and then you see you're at the top, and like, okay, I'll just take the first reps, right? Yeah. So it was more so like that. And for me, I had to keep it that way to not let it get too big in my head.
Sure.
Just say, you know, just, okay, yeah, I'm at the top of it. Doesn't mean anything. Like, okay. Because I worked extremely hard to put myself in position, and by the grace of God, able to get there. And it was like, the goal wasn't to just be a starter, like just be the starter, win the job. I was like, that wasn't my goal. My goal was to go be the best possible player I could be on the football field when the lights came on. And that was my goal.
Well, you had a heck of a debut, man. That was so fun. That'll be forever one of my most favorite memories of working. That first game. What was going through your head as you know, I don't know, leading up to the game, or you head out for warm ups and then the kickoff and it's real. You know, what's going through your head as you're trying to process that very first time?
Again, man, I was weird. I wish I would have kind of. I get, well, maybe I didn't. Like, it became so compartmentalized to where it was like, I'm just thinking about the play, then the next play. And then, okay, well, I'm warming up. I got to focus on this drill and the warm-ups. As we're, you know, head on the field, I know I got certain things I got to do. I know on this play, this is what needs to happen. You know, this is my read on here. You know, and then all the things that the coach would drill in our heads, you know, protecting the ball, you know, time, down distance, things like that. That was all that was playing in my head. So I just didn't have time to consider anything until after the game was over. Then you look and people are going crazy. And then you see my mom. And then you're like, oh, they were won the Big Ten last year, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And they were a highly ranked team. And I didn't know that. I didn't care. It was just really focused on the task at hand. So I can't say I was aware of what was going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's an answer that any coach would love to hear, because that's exactly what they try to.
Oh, yeah.
For the most part, that's the mentality they wish their kids would have, is one play at a time. Right. You got to focus on this play. The next play doesn't matter until we get to that next play. So that's a pretty impressive mindset for a young guy at the time, I got
to
say.
No, yeah. Shout out to the coaches. It's one of the biggest things that I've learned from, you know, Coach Pinkel and Coach C, Coach Yost, was having to lock in on those specifics, right? They were really detailed about that. So I appreciate about how they helped me develop that process.
Yeah. So another amazing game later that year. The final result didn't go our way, but we hosted Oklahoma at Memorial Stadium in Columbia. It was a heck of a game, back and forth, went down to the wire. I think they had a fake field goal late in the game that kind of turned the tide, but it was still a great game. Yeah. And I know, you know, you're always out there to win the game and there's no moral victories and all that, but still that had to be a pretty fun experience for you, right? Because that kind of announced, hey, you know what, there's something building here in Columbia, right?
Yeah. I mean, you get a national powerhouse that comes in and you're having an opportunity to win the game, and you know, they have to resort to something to beat you, like a fake field goal or something like that. And then competing, you know, athletically, I think for our team and kind of the coaches to, because, you know, you got Oklahoma's, they've been recruiting, you know, 5 stars for years and 4 stars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing where you're at athletically even, and to be able to match up and do the things that give you a position to win. It was encouraging. Of course, we didn't get the win, but it was internally, it was like, okay, we can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So just in a general sense, you taking over the offense, you know, as a freshman like that, I always thought that had to be challenging for you in a number of ways, but just you know, knowing you like I do and like the coaches do, you know, you're a very unassuming person, you know, obviously very confident in what your abilities are, but, you know, very humble and not trying to take over, like not an aggressive personality, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I mean that as a compliment. So it had to be kind of challenging for you though, as a young guy, to like assume control of the huddle and the offense. What was that challenge like for you?
It was interesting. We had a couple, you know, older guys, seniors and juniors that, you know, were good players. And you step into the room and, you know, they want to be playing. Everybody wants to be playing. And I guess my number one thing was respect for those guys and appreciation and kind of empathy, understanding how they would feel, because I know how I would. Sure. And so just communicating with the guys and, you know, even trying to get them to help me understand and see what they see, mm-hmm. and just being a good teammate to them was extremely important to me. Because I, like you said, I'm not an overly aggressive personality, and, you know, I'm dealing with a lot of, you know, I work with some young players and quarterbacks, and everybody thinks you got to have this bravado and be this mm-hmm. loud, overly assertive and like domineering type of personality, when the goal is take your team down the field, score a touchdown. Like, when you think yeah. about it, ultimately that's the goal. And there's so many different ways of doing it as a quarterback. But I think one thing that's non-negotiable is your laser focus on what the goal is. And if you demonstrate how laser focused you are, your team will come behind you to follow you, because they see you so intent on the goal. And right. so that was my mindset, was, you know, I don't have to yell and scream, but if I do, if I say something loud, hopefully it carries some weight, because I don't do it very much.
Yeah, absolutely. So another game, we'll fast forward to your sophomore season, had Nebraska at our place, and you knew the story. You know, Mizzou hadn't beaten Nebraska in like 25 years, and it was a sold out stadium going nuts, and it was a rainy game, and, you know, mm-hmm. back and forth for a while, but then we kind of took control in the fourth quarter. What do you remember about that game? I don't know. A lot of people love that throwback pass that Darius threw to you, and you had that convoy of blockers downfield. Yeah, what are some of your memories from that game?
That was fun. I remember, I think it was like a third and or fourth and short, and I threw a pass. I think it was J.D. McCoy. Mm-hmm. I think he was still there, tight end. And mm-hmm. he reached down like by his shoestrings, like just an amazing catch to keep a drive going. I remember stuff like that. I remember Zach Abron running over their linebacker, which is like an All-American dude. And mm-hmm. and Zach set the tone for that game, because he was getting, I don't know what his average was per carry that game, but he was popping off, you know, 8, 9, 10-yard runs and kept us on schedule and yeah. things like that. You know, I remember just little things that we executed well throughout that game that led us to that win. So that was exciting. I remember some other things too after the game, but
I was going to ask, because I was, so after the game we win, it's an amazing, you know, people rush the field, which I wish they wouldn't, because nothing yeah. good happens when kids rush the field like that, and we all know what happened. You know, it was really just a horrible incident where one of our fans got hit by a Nebraska player. And the yeah. reason that I'm asking you about this is because I know you were around. I don't remember if you actually saw the thing happen or you just saw the kid on the ground. And I'm chasing after you because I've got to try to get you for the yeah. post-game TV interview, right? And it's just chaos, thousands of people on the field. And as I'm coming up on you, you're like bent over, you know, showing concern for this kid who's on the ground. And I just always think back, and, you know, and you look back at me once you knew I was there and you say, hey, we got to make sure this guy's okay. And, you know, mm-hmm. we got him help eventually. But that just always sticks out to mm-hmm. me. You know, here we are, this, you know, watershed moment, probably the coolest thing that's happened to you at that point in your life from an athletic standpoint, right? This big mm-hmm. win. And your biggest concern at the time is for this guy who got hurt. I don't know that that's so much as a question as a statement, but that always stood out to me as something that shows your character.
Oh, I don't know how much character I got, but it was like slow motion. Yeah. It was like I could see the hand come back, and I see you getting hit, then like the you know, the blood coming out of the guy's like nose.
Yeah,
and I'm like, man, this ain't good. So, you know, number one, getting a guy help like that kind of trumps. And I think, not to be too deep, but like, people don't remember, they'll remember the game, but after we're gone, they won't remember that. Like, telling these stories necessarily, it won't even, it doesn't even matter to the kids. They don't even know, like, they would know who I am or who anybody is. You know, nobody knows who won the Super Bowl 10 years ago. But, like, it's the human parts of us that mean something the most. The human parts of connecting with people and showing concern and care and trying to help each other. It's like, eventually, that's what you come down to, and that's what matters. So that was an amazing moment for me and, of course, the school and the team. But, yeah, I think that moment of humanity, like, that's the thing I remember most about that day, strangely.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. All right. Well, on to, you know, not such heavy topics here. You know, you were the first Division I player ever with 8,000 passing yards and 4,000 rushing yards in a career. And I know you didn't do it to, you know, to set records and all those kinds of things. But if you allow yourself to reflect on an achievement like that, you know, what does something like that mean to you?
I don't know, man. I think,
and it doesn't have to mean anything either. I know, yeah, like I said, that wasn't your mindset.
I don't think it means doesn't mean much. I mean, like, I have fun. I love doing it.
Let me ask it this way then: did you get more satisfaction out of a big passing play that you hit downfield, or a big running play that, you know, you broke through the line and, you know, run it down the sideline? Did you have more fun either way there?
And not either. I think it depended on the situation, like what was needed at the time. I think, like, if I maximized what was needed, like if I had a, you know, a run play called and, you know, it's only maybe designed thinking you'll get one or two and you go for, you know, 60, then that meant that was like, oh, yeah, like over. Or if, or, you know, you make a play, scramble around and get the ball down the field, or get hit in the face while throwing something, you know, and completing it on fourth down or something, like the situation made it mean something more. So, I mean, running and throwing, it didn't really matter, but like the moment made it, if that makes sense, the moment made it cooler or funner. And then or what the score was in the game, or who we were playing, or who tried to tackle me, or whatever. So that made it interesting.
Yeah.
More so.
Well, yeah. All I know is that, you know, you might not have had the fastest 40 time when, you know, you had to clock your times, but you never got caught from behind, man. I don't know. You were like faster with pads on, it seemed like.
I did. I definitely got caught from behind.
I never saw it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's being a football player, like, at the end of the day, like, when you put the pads on, a lot of people like to wear shorts and stuff like that. But, like, I always try to the priest to the kids and my kids is, I mean, anybody can play the game. That's what makes it so beautiful. Anybody can go out there and do it. But like, how will you impact it? How will you respect the game with your passion and intensity when you go out there? Or is that grass doesn't respect who you are, where you're from? It disrespects with the work you put in. So that's how I approach it.
This has been a preview of The Mo Show with Chad Mueller. For the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Rock M Plus at rockm.plus.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Rock M Radio, a proud partner of Fans First Sports Network. Rock M Radio is the official podcast network of Rock M Plus, a new and exciting subscription service provided by me and the other voices of Rock M Radio. Please take a few moments to head over to rockm.plus and sign up for an account today. The cost is only $5 a month, and benefits include access to our live podcast, a subscriber-only message board, weekly newsletters, and more. If you enjoyed this episode of Rock M Radio and would like to see more just like it beamed directly into your personal device, make sure to click the subscribe button below and tell your friends. Our podcast feed is available through the Apple Podcast app for iPhone, Google Podcast app for Android, whatever app you listen to your podcast. You can also find Rock M Radio on Spotify. If you're looking for a podcast about your favorite team that is not Missouri Tigers, Fan First Sports Network is your answer. A full podcast network loaded with the team-specific podcasts covering Major League Baseball, the NFL, NHL, NBA, MLS, and more. And we'll be back with more episodes of Rock M Radio coming to you soon.